This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, the business station. My name is Rich Bradbury. I'm sitting in for Mr. Jeff Sandu. I'm in the studio with Culture Pop's very own Matt Armitage. This, of course, is Geek Squawk. So, what are we talking about this week?
Well, we're talking about who owns our technology and our data. Last week on Matt's Plane, we talked about potentially tech companies gaining access to our thoughts. So a couple of stories have come out this week. So Italy has come down hard on Apple and Samsung for slowing down the phones, ostensibly because to protect them against the effects of age and old batteries and all that kind of thing. But it does make absolutely, but it does make you wonder who actually has control over our technology. Yeah. So when we look at a lot of these smartphones, especially the flagship models from Apple and Samsung, these things are really expensive. You know, you're talking $1,000 US or more for these devices. Mm. So you buy it, you expect to actually own it. But of course, we don't own the operating system that sits on these phones. These companies still have complete control over the device.
Right.
In Apple's case, I mean, I think they don't do it so much now, but if you broke the operating system or jailbroke the operating system, they could actually block your phone. So you end up with this piece of technology that's very expensive, but you can't
do anything with it.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, it's all about this idea of who actually should own these rights. If we're purchasing the device, why are we not allowed to do what we want with it? Why? It's not so much about Italy saying, okay, we're fining you for doing this. It's why do these companies have the right to do that in the first place?
Right.
Why do they have the controls? You have to look at the kind of the macro of this and just wonder what exactly is going through people's heads in that they can sell something to you and still own it after you've bought it.
And still restrict what you do to it. And I mean, it was earlier in the week that I remember reading about the right to repair movement. You've probably picked up on this as well. Motorola have come forward and said, you know, okay, from now on, if you want to repair your phone, we will allow you to do that. We'll give you the tools to do it. We'll team up with iFixit. We'll give you the tools. We'll give you the official kind of hardware. And I think that's a great move forward for Motorola. But
yes,
at the end of the day, they're not Apple. They're not Samsung.
No, they're not.
A big player.
And Motorola has been one of the first to adopt this kind of modular approach. So it has lots of modules that you can add onto its phones to expand the life. There are various open source platforms for this kind of thing as well. But when you turn your laptop or your phone upside down, you will generally find that they use non-standard screws and divots that you can't even open. And you will also find that your warranty is voided if you do open the casing of these things. Again, the legality of that has been challenged several times because if you buy it, in theory, you have the right to open it up and do whatever you want with it. I mean, you know, you don't buy a car and you can only use Bridgestone tires if you want to put Continentals on them. You put Continentals on them.
Right.
If you want to paint it fluorescent green, paint it fluorescent green. You know, somebody doesn't have the right. You know, somebody from the car company doesn't have the right to come back to you and say, no, you can't do that to it. That's not what we intended because you've bought it.
It's interesting you say that, actually, because that was going to be the example that I used years ago when my dad had an old Volvo. You know, they're boxy, but they're good.
Everyone's dad had an old Volvo.
And they last forever. And he would do his own repairs on it. And then he'd had it for years. And then he decided that he was going to buy himself a new car. The first time he'd ever bought a new car. He drove it home. And when something went wrong with it a couple of years later and he flipped the lid, you know, he's looking at it like, I don't know where to start. I don't know how to fix it. And so it kind of begs that question. Is like the advancement of tech just, is it that that's limiting us? You know, because the companies have just gone, there's so much tech in it. You're too stupid to fix it. Stay away.
I mean, there's part of that is true. Yes, when you look at some laptops, for example, like the CPU and the motherboard is actually welded to the back of the screen. So if you do go in there and start messing around with it, it's quite probable that the device is not going to work for very long. But that still should be your choice. Yeah, you know, if again, it's like those lovely YouTube people, Will It Blend, who like to put all the latest technology in one of their industrial blenders and see what happens. They have the right to do that because they've bought the device, and if they want to turn it into a bunch of grey goo, fine, that's entirely up to them. By the same token, we should be able to take the back off it and have a fiddle around. Okay, yes, if you start rerouting circuits and things, that may void your warranty. But again, these things, I think it shouldn't void it on a kind of blanket basis. If you haven't done anything to the screen and something's wrong with the screen, then that should still be covered by the warranty. You know, we just accept these things from the tech company, which is why it's kind of interesting that this week Tim Cook has made a speech asking for better data privacy regulations in the US.
Oh, the irony.
Well, of course. Now, that doesn't mean what he's saying isn't sensible. I mean, it's, you know, we've seen this kind of deregulation of data in the US, which is quite a worrying trend. I was listening to something about elections in the US. I think it was Alabama or one of the A states. And they were saying that their electoral rolls were actually sitting on a server, and anyone could actually access them just by accessing the sitemap. And that would give you names, addresses, driving license numbers, and the last four digits of people's social security numbers. That information should have been firewalled. And the guys who found that didn't even have to hack the system. They literally just clicked sitemap, which was on the menu page of the electoral rolls information, and they were able to access that data. So there was no hacking involved. So the US does need to kind of fall in step with some of these data regulations. And Apple generally is better with people's private data than a lot of other companies, but that's partly because they make their money from selling us really expensive devices and not from selling information to third parties. So they have a different revenue model. But as you said, there's a huge irony there for the company that just arbitrarily decides what you can do with your device. And don't forget, they also control what apps go into the App Store that you can load on. So anything that Apple disagrees with, for whatever the various reasons, you are then not allowed to install on your phone. At least with Android, you can load things sideways if you want to put your own content on.
Even to that point where Apple had granted, or had rather tried to block access to a certain app that the police were using to get inside the app and read the phone and read the data inside there. And recently, in the last couple of days, I think they've patched that. That has also stopped the police from now getting into the new operating system.
I mean, that's another level of the privacy regs. I mean, again, none of this makes a lot of sense, but things don't make a lot of sense. You know, the legal issues are incredibly complicated. So you have Tim Cook speaking for increasing data privacy, but at the same time, you have his company making these arbitrary decisions about how you can use the device, which also infringe on your privacy and your right of ownership. So none of this stuff makes a lot of sense. You have to look for your champions where they are. You have to acknowledge that there's inconsistencies in what they're doing. That doesn't mean you shouldn't support what they're saying in one area. That doesn't mean you can't oppose them in another area. So it is complex. It is confusing. I know most of us don't really want to spend a lot of time thinking about it, but these issues of ownership are really, really important because, again, you mentioned the cars example. Cars are getting so complicated now. You know, when you press the accelerator on the car floor, there's no wire. You're just going to a computer, the same with the brake pedal, the same with the steering. So that's why people are able to hack and take over your car. So again, these issues of ownership are critical because you could have a car company that decides that, well, you know, maybe you shouldn't be allowed to drive your car on a Thursday.
Right. That's where we are, isn't it?
It's where we are, yeah, which is why the legal framework is so important, because that actually defines what is allowed.
We're going to take a short break, Matt.
Okay.
I need to lighten up a little bit. I don't own anything.
Sorry.
All right, you are, of course, listening to Geek Squawk here on BFM 89.9. What are we talking about when we come back?
What are we? Oh, we're talking about exoskeleton AI. There's a light subject for you.
There we go. BFM 89.9, the business station.
Before Friday materializes, BFM 89.9.
BFM 89.9, the business station. My name is Rich Bradbury. I'm in the studio with Culture Pop's Matt Armitage. He's here.
I'm back, and I'm about to scare you some more.
Come on, scare me then. No King of the Crowd this week, then?
No King of the Crowd this week. It's drivel.
There's no kings, there's no queens,
there's no kings,
princes.
There's no queens, and there's nothing to put in the dungeon either, so we'll be back with that one next week. No, what we're talking about today is organic computers. So,
Of course we are.
Yeah. So we've been talking about the limits of silicon now. A lot of the supercomputers we have now have already pushed silicon to its very limits. So we're already talking about quantum computing, which no one understands because it happens. It's more complicated than Bitcoin.
Yeah.
It just makes no sense. So we're looking now at organic computers because when you look at DNA and RNA, they actually encode huge amounts of information. So scientists have been looking at ways to exploit that information for the next generation of supercomputers, especially when we're talking about artificial intelligence. One of the advantages of these is obviously they store a lot of information, but they're also a lot smaller and they're a lot more energy efficient. Mm-hmm. Now, I think it's reckoned that as much as 20% of the world's energy could be taken up by the needs of information technology, which is colossal when
it's
you
huge.
Consider it. Yeah. So now, like I said, we're looking at things like DNA and RNA. And a group of researchers at the University of West of England, that's in Bristol, I can't do that accent and I'm not even going to try, they're trying to use this with something called cytoskeletons. Now, these are actually the proteins, the scaffold essentially that gives the cells in our bodies shape and helps them to move. So these are really tiny particles.
The one thing is about, though, these things die. Cells die.
Well, computers die as well.
But over a period of time, I mean, okay.
Do you know any 86-year-old computers?
That's not funny. Of course I don't.
Right. How many 86-year-old people do you know? Probably a handful.
A handful, yeah.
Right, exactly. So, our cell structures are actually remarkably robust.
Yeah.
I mean, they do shed and whatever over time, but they regenerate. So they're looking at using these kind of building blocks of our own bodies as a way to base the computers in the future.
Right.
Now, as with anything that is this complicated, the scientists are not agreeing with each other. Now, some of the people who are talking about the next generation that are made from DNA, they're saying that that's a superior technology because it has the ability to transmit from cell to cell.
Cell to cell, yeah.
So the actual processing will be easier. Other people are saying that actually, no, it's these cytoskeletons that could potentially be better because they have more ability to transmit and process more information. They're simpler, so they can actually process these transactions a lot faster.
Right.
So we're finding that there's a lot of discord in the industry as to whether or not this will proceed. But what we can say for sure is that I think the next generation of computers is going to be organic. And when we look at the next generation of computers and we add in artificial intelligence...
I was just going to say that. Oh, my
word.
Yes.
Yeah, so you look at the next generation being organic artificial intelligence. Because I've done a few shows and talks recently about, you know, this idea of having an artificial intelligence in your own brain now sitting on a chip. Now, if that chip is organic and that's sitting alongside your own consciousness, you start to get into these really interesting areas of what's a person, how many consciousnesses are in one person's head. Is that person one personality or two personalities?
Right, right.
So you get into these really kind of complicated areas that the technology is pushing us towards. It sounds like weird science fiction, but it is actually coming reality.
It's not as weird as you think. I mean, just earlier in the week, I was talking about taxi drones in Singapore and about how they will be taking off in 2019.
Oh, no, absolutely.
Everything is happening way too fast.
Yeah, Singapore is, weird to say, a launch pad for a lot of these autonomous technologies, which is kind of strange because it's such a densely populated island. You wouldn't think it would be the one that would test run a lot of these technologies.
But I'm just scared about how quickly things are happening in the last 4 or 5 years. Now we're talking, the next we're going to be talking about electric chewing gum. I mean, have we gotten to a place now where we're so sick and tired of flavors that we have to have an electric chewing gum that, what, electrocutes your tongue?
Well, okay, this is an interesting story. I mean, there are a lot of things on the Kickstarter type, the crowdfunding campaigns that flavor your water. So cups that come with an impregnated flavor in them that trick your taste buds into thinking that you're drinking orange juice when actually you're drinking water.
You're blowing my mind right now.
No, I know, but this is stuff that's actually available already. One of the reasons for it being that it can help to promote healthier lifestyles. So, you know, you're tricking the taste buds into thinking that it's taking in sugar or something sweet, which activates those kind of pleasure centers in the brain. Actually, you're just taking in water, so no calories, you're just rehydrating. So that kind of thing.
Win-win.
Win-win. Now, as for this one, I still haven't quite figured this out. Yes, it is called Unlimited Electric Gum. And
that's a catchy name, isn't it?
Yeah, I know. And it's a piece of plastic film. It's like a standard piece of gum, but it doesn't erode. Obviously, you don't want to swallow it. And it has piezoelectric sensors in it that stimulate your taste buds and give it the simulation of having flavor. So it's in early tests at the moment in Japan. At the moment,
of course it is.
Yeah, of course it is. So basically, by changing the pattern and the texture of the shocks and changing the strength of them, it can make us think that a flavor is bitter, salty, sour, sweet, or umami. They're going to add specific flavors rather than just the sensations eventually. But like I said, I still can't figure out why this is necessary. I can see the idea for the mug with the impregnated flavor. You know, yeah. You want to get your kid to stop drinking sodas and start drinking more water. I can understand that. I can understand why you don't want bits of chewing gum on pavements and sidewalks and that kind of thing. But I'm not sure that electric chewing gum is the solution to that problem.
It just seems like one of those things that we absolutely don't need. And somebody in a lab has sat down and said, you know what, I think let's just try this.
I mean,
But for whatever reason, it baffles me.
If it turns out that it has other applications, then that's fine. If it can be used in therapies for people who've lost sensations of taste, for example, okay, I can understand maybe that would work. If it's, as you said, just we're doing it because we can.
Because we can.
And it does make me wonder as well, if it's giving you little electric shocks, what would happen if you did swallow it?
Oh.
Would it just be tingling all the way through your body?
And it's everlasting.
Well, it would go through you eventually. Would you be like sitting down and suddenly you're going, ooh, sweet, ooh, salty. You know, every time you burp, a different tear. I don't know. I really don't get it.
You've thought about this too much. Okay, so it only has those sensations there, so umami and I don't know. No, I'm not into this, no. Okay, so that was Geek Squawk then, but before we go, you must have got a Geeks tune.
I do. This is a band I know absolutely nothing about. This is just one of those songs that you hear. This is spiky garage pop from a band called La Luth. This is Loose Teeth. BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.